Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, August 2nd, 2022. Hey, we weren't on yesterday. Did you miss us? Did you miss me? Come on, tell me the truth. We had some issues and such, even extending through today. I think we got them fixed. We had, I'll tell you what, it was a fabulous response to it. It continues to be to the mini conference, the information that's been being provided right now and continually updated. So keep checking your account. You log into your account and you can check that way. The PDF went from a small PDF to a huge PDF, over 200 pages. And that's being finalized as I speak. Now, when that is up, because we want you to get more for your investment than you ever got from anywhere else. Once that PDF is up, it should be up Wednesday. We'll let you know. I mean, you can check, continue to check. Eric Detect, do they get like an automatic notice or they have to check? Yeah, just log in. That's the easiest way to do it. I would do it after 5 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesday. But here's another part of things. I've been holding this back. What I'm going to do once that PDF is published and uploaded to the fundraiser, I'm going to create an investigative report that shows you not everything, because I can't. I've got to leave some things back because of the ongoing nature of the investigation. But I'm going to show you what Russ, his team, specifically Russ, his team, myself, what we found currently in today's world as it relates to what you were seeing before, or what you were seeing from 6,000 years ago. Okay. To me, that's mind-blowing. So I'm going to add to everything. I wasn't going to because I was a little bit hesitant, only because of the way, obviously, investigations work. But I think that after talking with certain individuals, including a prosecutor, and including an attorney, I think this will be okay. But this will give you the very same thing that Russ saw, discovered, that members of his team discovered, a few members, and saw in real time back in, I'm going to say as late as last September with Russ, and then with our team as recent as last month. Some of the writings on some of the documents and objects that we were able to recover locally and how they fit with the things you're seeing. So if you've already registered, you're going to see that. But again, I'm not going to do that until after the PDF is up. And the reason for that is I'm going to make reference in that report to the PDF, certain images in the PDF. Okay. So I want to wait for that. And I think you're going to be amazed at that. So there you have it. And I would expect, if you want a timeline, I would expect this weekend that I will have that completed by this weekend. Okay. Because, you know, again, I have to be very careful in the investigative aspect of things, not to create, problems and such, because there are ongoing cases that are being adjudicated that we must watch. Okay, but thank you for that. It's a success. And folks, just go to HagmanReport.com or SteveQuayle.com, click on the link, the banner, and register if you haven't done so. It doesn't cut off. In other words, it'll be there. You don't have to register by a certain day. You can do it today. You can do it tomorrow. You can do it the next day. But you will be getting the videos, the PDF, and then ultimately, once that PDF is done, a couple of days thereafter, my report, investigative report. And I think you're going to find it very interesting. All right. And again, my apologies for yesterday. It's, you know, it seems like every time that we do something or attempt to do something, the gremlins come in and make things difficult. All right. Even yesterday, we had a situation where our lines were cut. I was talking to Stan. I said, Stan, there's no way we can get them fixed by showtime today. And MacGyver over here, I attribute everything to MacGyver, the Eric the Tech. I tell you, he's a man of all seasons. He'd look good in a tuxedo or a, you know, workman's outfit, right? Was able to rescue us, and with the help of another technician as well. But ultimately, but it's all good. If I was conspiracy minded, I'd say, man, it's a big conspiracy. Okay, a lot of stuff to get into. Stan Dale will be with us in the second segment. If you've been paying attention to the news, there's a lot of stuff going on. So where to start, right? Because you've got everything from Ayman al-Zawahiri to, the usual suspects, right? To, I guess the big thing, not I guess, looking at this from a larger perspective, the big thing is this rather troublesome trip by Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan. What we are seeing right now are tensions over Taiwan that haven't been this high since 1996. And a visit by the speaker could push China to the brink. This, according to Bloomberg, of all places. Now, we should not take this lightly. Pelosi arrived in Taiwan, and there's a video of it out there. But you have to ask yourself why. Now, she's obviously going to miss, sadly, she's going to miss her her husband, Paul, his arraignment this week. He's due to be arraigned tomorrow for causing a wreck, being drunk, causing a wreck, and that resulted in injuries. So she's going to miss that. Sad for her, right? But what's the real reason? And folks, I want to ask you, what is the real reason for Nancy Pelosi's Taiwan visit? You have to, obviously, there are a number of issues here that we're looking at. You're looking at a war footing now that's really being caused by the deep state. And I say deep state, the party of Davos, whatever you want to call them. The war tensions between the U.S. and China. Now, this at a time when Ukraine is kind of just in the background, kind of just getting, you know, suddenly getting pushed aside, kind of like the coronavirus was, right? So you've got these multiple crises. And the left, don't forget, the left thrives on crisis. But I want to echo, and perhaps the segment title would be apt, those who play with fire will perish by it. That is a quote by Xi Jinping of China in a 2-hour and 17-minute phone conversation or a teleconference between Biden and Xi Jinping. Now, last week. By the way, it's not 2 hours and 20 minutes. Think about the numbers here. Not 2 hours and 20 minutes, not 2 hours and 15. No, it's 2 hours and 17 minutes. I ask, any, what do you think of that? Okay. I looked for some of the best coverage I could possibly find. I found 4 minutes, of backstory, current assessment, and front story. And I want to play this clip. It's a 4 minute clip. It kind of, it more or less summarizes what's happening. All right. Now this is from InfoWars. And then I want to get into four pieces of information after that that I think are important. And this also stems from a couple of reports, whether it be from Bloomberg or from Breitbart or from some of the other more, I don't know what you would call them. With Bloomberg, okay, that's part of the mainstream, but Breitbart, more of a balanced approach to the threat of war. Because there is, to me, and I'm gonna lead into the clip with this. The intent here is my view. The intent here is to create a crisis by the left. And that would be, the consequences of that would be multiple. There'd be multiple consequences, including but not limited to potentially delaying the midterms. Because right now they know they can't win in the midterms. And we, as a collective society, are certain to say, wait a minute, we can beat them even when they cheat. So they've got to hold power. So they've got to create a crisis that could possibly impact the midterms. They've got to do something that will take Biden out. Hang on now. Biden's got to go. You got to understand, Biden's got to go. I've been hearing this from so many people in D.C. Even members of the Biden team are saying Biden's got to go. And they're throwing him under the bus with Hunter's stuff. But Pelosi, make no mistake, Pelosi is in charge up front here. I'm not saying she's in charge. She's not pulling the strings. Her strings are being pulled, but she is the front person of the strings being pulled people, if you get my drift. So let's play clip one. I'm going to come back. We'll discuss it. Four pieces of knowledge that you need to know about this. Four troublesome aspects of this. And then we'll go from there. Go ahead. Clip one.
On July 28th, earlier this week, Biden and Xi Jinping spoke for 2 hours and 17 minutes, the fifth time they have spoken since Biden took office. They discussed the possibility of meeting in person sometime soon. However, the tone of their conversation was not completely cordial. Xi Jinping issued a stark warning over U.S. relations with Taiwan in reaction to Nancy Pelosi's potential visit to the island nation. Quote, "Those who play with fire will perish by it. It is hoped that the United States will be clear-eyed about this." Just like Russia with eastern Ukraine, China sees Taiwan as a satellite of itself, and they wish to reunite it with the mainland, by force if need be. During their meeting, Biden stuck to the One China policy and affirms that the U.S. hasn't changed its position and does not back Taiwan independence. The U.S. recognized Taiwan's independence for 30 years after Communist China was formed, but switched their position in 1979. The White House officially stated, quote, "The U.S. policy has not changed, and the U.S. strongly opposes unilateral efforts to change the status quo or undermine peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait." Overall, the Biden administration fears Pelosi's trip could spark a major crisis across the Taiwan Strait and has warned her not to go. Pelosi was a originally scheduled to travel to Taipei in April, but pulled out at the last minute after testing positive for coronavirus. She hasn't indicated her current travel plans to Taiwan for security reasons, including the fear of having her plane shot down in the Taiwan Strait. The South China Morning Post reported that Taiwan would have to bear the wrath of Beijing if Pelosi visited the island. Senior Colonel Tan Kaifei, a Chinese Defense Ministry spokesman, stated, quote, "If the U.S. insists on taking its own course, the Chinese military will never sit idly by, and it will definitely take strong actions to thwart any external forces' interference." According to Beijing sources, the U.S. has stepped up their activities in the South China Sea, with a guided missile destroyer entering waters claimed by China 3 times in a week. Also, the USS Ronald Reagan and its strike group arrived in the South China Sea on July 28th, which the Chinese Foreign Ministry, Zhao Lijian, described as the U.S. flexing its muscles. Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stated, quote, "If there's a decision made that Speaker Pelosi or anyone else is going to travel, and they asked for military support, we will do what is necessary to ensure a safe conduct of their visit." And I'll just leave it at that. China and the West have been engaging in risky one-on-one confrontations, including dangerously close flybys that force pilots to swerve out of the way, like scenes straight out of Top Gun, which happened to edit out a patch of the Taiwanese flag from Tom Cruise's jacket at the behest of Communist China. Pelosi has invited other members of Congress to join her in her visit to Taiwan sometime next month. Both Democrats and Republicans were included. Rep. Michael McCaul of Texas responded with, quote, "Any member that wants to go should. It shows political deterrence to President Xi. But she should also pay attention to the military if it's going to cause a blowback and escalate things." Chinese Foreign Ministry Zhao Lijian also claimed that, quote, "It is clear from this for everyone to see who is the biggest threat to the South China Sea and the Asian region's peace and stability. If the U.S. side insists on making the visit and challenges China's red line, it will be met with resolute countermeasures. The U.S. must assume full responsibility for any serious consequence arising thereof." Well, if war with China starts next month, it's all Nancy Pelosi's fault. This is Brian Wilson with InfoWars.com.
All right, that was Brian Wilson. And you notice that that was recorded prior to Nancy Pelosi leaving and then landing in Taiwan. All right. So the reason I selected that is because that had many elements of what led up to and is currently transpiring today with Pelosi being in Taiwan. Don't discount the importance of this. There are a couple of issues here I want to get into. Who said Taiwan will be next? You won't have any computer chips. They'll blow them off the face of the earth. Who said that? Well, we're talking about the hold that thought, because we're talking about the Taiwan Strait and her trip to Asia now has included a stop in Taiwan. I hope she packed her SPF 1000 sunscreen, as really this whole situation is heating up. When it came to that call that Brian Wilson referenced on Thursday, the Chinese President Xi Jinping warned President Joe Biden that resolutely safeguarding China's national sovereignty and territorial integrity is the firm will of more than 1.4 billion, I'm sorry, Chinese people. Those who play with fire will perish by it. So, yeah, Kevlar pantsuit Pelosi, perhaps. That won't even help her. Now, remember, I got to take it back to early April. Japanese media reported that Pelosi would go there after a trip to Japan. And as soon as that was said, Foreign Minister Wang Yi, as you saw in that video, warned that a visit to Taiwan by such a high-ranking legislator would be a malicious provocation. Understand those words, malicious provocation. So what are we doing here? What's Pelosi doing here? Did Pelosi break away from Biden, his will, or Obama Biden? Ask yourself that. Now, at that time, she postponed her trip. Why? Because she contracted the coof, supposedly. And then she rescheduled her trip according to, actually, the Financial Times broke the story that she rescheduled the trip for August now. And that was some time ago. And added, the Financial Times added that she would most likely fly to Taipei on the U.S. military aircraft. Now, some analysts looking at Chinese denunciations of the proposed visit say that China could send aircraft to escort her plane and prevent it from landing. Think about that. And Biden, Mr. Potato Head there, said this: the military thinks it's not a good idea right now. That's about Pelosi's trip. But you know what? That didn't change Pelosi's mind. So who's pulling the strings here of the Pelosi marionette? Why now? What's this all about? Because nothing is as it appears. And if you're watching this, there's footage of her by, I believe it's Taiwanese television, it could be Chinese television, of Pelosi landing. So why? Here are a couple of the four issues. And this, again, was raised by Neil Ferguson, or Niall Ferguson of Bloomberg. But some four issues here that we need to address. Why did the Pentagon take 3 months to figure out that a trip by the House Speaker to Taiwan was not a good idea? Because obviously it's not. As if relations between the U.S. and China took a turn for the worse only a week ago, Taiwan has been the key flashpoint of a Cold War or Cold War II. Think of it this way: Berlin plus Cuba plus the Persian Gulf ever since the Sino-American relationship decisively soured some 4 years ago. And the author of a Bloomberg article, which will be in the program description notes, thehagmanreport.com. And by the way, we do have a new section. I'll get into that later at hagmanreport.com. You got to check it out. It's going to rock. It's going to rock. It's my thoughts. All right. So as Niall Ferguson wrote, in fact, in Bloomberg some time ago, bringing Taiwan under the control of Beijing has been the consistent objective of the Chinese Communist Party for decades. And you got to understand, Foreign Minister Spokesman Li Jian is a noted exponent of the new wolf warrior diplomacy, meaning that essentially there's nothing new about his warning that Pelosi's visit would pose a threat to the Chinese sovereignty and territorial integrity, and that China would have to respond with strong and resolute measures. What's China left? What are we leaving China with by this? What is to be gained by this? You know, it blows my friggin' mind that these leftist lunatics who think that Biden, Harris, Pelosi, the left is so great, they're gonna get us into a war. Go back to 1954 to 1955. Go back to 1958. Go back to 1995 and 96. In June of 1995, which is perhaps the most similar to today, the president of Taiwan was granted a visa to deliver a speech at his alma mater, Cornell. Gee, a lot of these people educated here in the United States at leftist universities. The lecture was on Taiwan's democratization experience. Now, at that time, Clinton was president, and he wasn't looking for trouble with China. He had campaigned against George W. Bush, H.W. Bush, that is, with a pledge not to coddle the tyrants of Beijing, but his early threat to restrict trade with China back then, in the absence of overall significant progress on human rights, had been a failure. By the way, this was despite even back then the enthusiastic support of Nancy Pelosi. Okay, the Clinton administration had denied Li Tengyi a visa once before. This time, Congress forced the issue, passing a resolution to favor Li's visit, in favor of the visit, by 396-0. So, as the speech was less than a year, again, I'm going back to 95 now, as this speech was less than a year before the first free election in Taiwan's history, many people expected Li to use that occasion to declare that the island's formal independence, to declare formal independence. Li's position was less than clear at the time, during that speech, though most people said they believed he privately supported independence. Now, years later, he surprised the Taiwanese public by saying, look, I don't buy this. One China policy, I'm for that. His election opponent, however, favored unification with the mainland. I got that backwards, but you get the idea right now. Beijing retaliation. Their retaliation to the U.S. decision to grant Li a visa was both diplomatic and military. You got to remember this. If not, please look this up. The Chinese ambassador to Washington was withdrawn. Watch for this to happen now. Watch for diplomatic relations to go south very quickly now. And when it does, this is going to hit like a lightning storm. I'm telling you right now. People who fail to understand and except history are doomed to repeat the mistakes of history. On July 21st, the PLA, by the way, I should say this. The Chinese ambassador to Washington was withdrawn. An American photojournalist in Beijing was arrested. On July 21st, the PLA began firing two missiles a day into an impact zone 100 miles north of Taiwan. Washington responded by ordering a series of naval operations in the Taiwanese Strait. It culminated back then in December with the transit through the strait by the aircraft carrier Nimitz Battle Group in response to the Chinese protests. Clinton administration explained the transit away as a weather diversion. I don't even know what the hell that means, okay, except to say they're talking out their bunghole, okay? Now, again, going back to 95, 96 time, there was a Taiwanese election date of March 23rd, 96. This is explained again in the Bloomberg article, but Beijing announced a new missile test and naval exercises, including an amphibious landing on an island selected because of the similarity of the topography there with that of Taiwan. Do you remember this? Does any of this ring a bell with anybody? Am I talking to air? Remember this? Hey, Pelosi, you were involved in this. Do you remember this? For the love of... Oh, my goodness. Missiles. Missiles were capable of carrying nuclear warheads. They were fired back then. And people in Washington, the pucker factor in Washington during that time period was quite severe. A couple of months before that, the deputy chief of Chinese general staff, General Zhang Gongyi, I don't even know how to pronounce these names, told a Chinese expert who had served as assistant secretary of defense that in the 1950s, you three times threatened nuclear strikes in China, which we did, and you could do that because we couldn't hit back. Now we can. So you're not going to threaten us again because in the end, you care a lot more about Los Angeles than Taipei. That was in 1998. He said that. Two years after the 96 Taiwanese election and 3 years after that little incident dust-up over there. But Clinton stood resolute. And look, I'm not going to get into the entire history of this. You've got to go back and understand the history. So let me just jump up to June. And again, on your screen, there is the delegation. Pelosi in her pink pantsuit, hopefully lined with Kevlar, and hopefully she's wearing SPF 1000, you know, Skeletor walking around there. Look, in June, Lloyd Austin, you know, Robo Austin, warned China against provocative and destabilizing activity near Taiwan. We talk a good talk, don't we? China basically told us to shut up. How's that for a summary? And but yet, here we are saying that Biden himself has indicated several times that he no longer really favors a strategic ambiguity with respect to Chinese relations, U.S.-Chinese relations, and Taiwan-China status. However, the U.S. at the same time in this, I don't even know what you would call this, kind of like a bipolar thing. They simultaneously, they acknowledge that Taiwan is part of a one-China policy and commits to resisting a forcible subjugation of the island by Beijing. I don't quite understand the two-sided talk out both sides of your mouth and then do this. So what's the real purpose here for normal people? Then you've got the other issues. You've got the domination of the South China Sea. You've got you've just got a ton of issues. I should point this out. Let me make sure I've got this correct here. In September of 2020, when President Donald Trump's administration sent Keith Kroc, the Undersecretary of State for Economic Growth, to Taipei, China's military retaliated by overstepping the median line that bisects the Taiwan Strait. And again, think back to the historical events and the tensions. China's not going to sit back and allow this stuff to happen. Now, last November, when the U.S. House delegation visited Taiwan, not the speaker, just a House delegation, the Chinese army deployed 24 aircraft to enter Taiwan's Southwest Air Defense Identification Zone. So, since Pelosi just did this, believe me when I tell you, the warm-up to a response, a hot response by China is coming. You have to wonder why, especially when you look back at the dates. That 95-96 scenario is probably, again, the closest scenario to what's going on now. But understand this. The leadership in China has changed and become more robust because they've got the weapons and they ain't afraid to use them. They said so. And they said, hey, you play with fire, you're going to perish by fire. And this is what Pelosi's doing. There's much, much more to this than meets the eye. Much more to this. Don't take this for granted. Do not take this for granted. All right, with me is, do we have Stan? Oh, man, this guy, I'll tell you what, Stan Deo is like, thank God for Stan. I so appreciate him. Because we had issues with our internet, and again, a line cut. If I was a conspiracy theorist, I'd say, boy, interesting time, but nonetheless, it's been repaired. Before Stan, I want to ask you something. Have you ever looked at your credit card statement and been shocked by the interest rate? If you haven't, boy, you're lucky. Or you know about Lightstream.com/Hagman. Did you know you can actually roll all of your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed interest rate. You can. Oh, yes, you can. Do it with me now. Lower your interest rate and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. I've been getting so many positive responses about this. And I thank the people who have taken advantage of this. Again, lightstream.com/Hagman. Rates start at 5.73% APR with auto pay and excellent credit. You get a fixed rate. It's not going to go up over the life of the loan. Do it now, folks. Do this now because you can see what's coming, right? And use the extra discretionary income for things like an EMP shield or your preps or some of Stan and Holly's intellectual products on their webpage. You can find a way to handle that extra money because of lightstream.com/Hagman. Look, Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. Here's what you got to do. Do it now, please. Again, do this now. Just for you, my listeners and viewers, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. You'd save even more. The only way to get this discount is go to lightstream.com/Hagman. I'm going to spell this out for you. It's LightStream, all one word, lightstream.com/Hagman. Two N's on Hagman. That's HAGMANN. Subject to credit approval. Rates range from 5.73% APR to 19.99% APR and include a 0.50% auto pay discount. Lowest rate requires excellent credit. Terms and conditions apply. And offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You'll thank me later, and you'll be glad you did this. Lightstream.com/Hagman. Thank you so much for the fine folks there at Lightstream. All right. Stan Dale from standale.com feels probably like a ping pong ball over the last 24 hours. I said, yeah, we're off. We're on. We're off. We're on. We're off. We're on. We're off. Okay. Here it is. Stan, you got the entire segment. Thank you, brother, for understanding. I appreciate you. Here you are.
Thank you, sir. I'm sorry you had the trouble over there. I know how it goes, though, and fortunately the internet company was able to repair the damage to the cables in time. So,
well, MacGyver over here did it first, and we thought we had it handled. I don't know how. MacGyver, Eric the Tech, and it wasn't quite pumping out the juice because of the damage done, and then they came and left, and so there we are. Okay.
Well. Yeah, I pulled a MacGyver here this morning. Earlier today, I had three tractor batteries, right? Holly wanted to do the tractor mowing out the back today. But last night till about 1 o'clock, I was working on the tractor trying to get the battery to work. The first battery, which was there on a charger, that's a maintenance charger, failed. And so, of course, when I turned the ignition key, it went, and that was it. So I went over to the house to garage where we have all the solar backups and the backup batteries for the diesel generators and that stuff. And so I pulled one of the three batteries I have on maintenance over there, put it into the tractor, turned the key. So then I went over and I took the other two batteries that were still on charger and brought them over. Only one of them worked, and it was the wrong kind of connectors for the tractor. So I had to MacGyver it, which required some baling wire cut to about a half inch length and sticking between the little round thing that goes onto the round knobby and pressing it down and screwing it in. And the MacGyver thing worked, and I was able to actually get power to the tractor this morning, finally, at about 8:15. Holly said to me, I'm not going out there now. It's too hot, you know. So I'm thinking, did all this stuff... Yes. Okay. It was a MacGyver moment. Truly a MacGyver moment. But yeah. Anyway, I managed to order some batteries in from Denver earlier today, and they'll be here tomorrow. And that little episode is now past.
Nice. Apparently, job, though. Nice job.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. It was interesting. I couldn't believe that three of my four batteries on maintenance supply, constant supply, had failed. And then I started to feel the sides of them, and they were bulged out. They were absolutely shorted out between the plates. And I thought, why? And Holly says, well, maybe it's the heat in the garage because it gets up over 100 degrees with all the solar batteries and stuff in there. So I went to, as I say, earlier today, to the battery stores, two or three of them, and talked to them about it. They said Arizona has this problem because people have these tractor batteries and they're bulging out and shorting out because of the heat. And so now then, I told Holly, well, you were right. And we're going to have a spot over here in the office where I will put these new batteries that come in on the table and on the, you know, constant charge and maintenance. And they will be okay because down here, it never gets over about 74, 75 degrees. Well, you live and learn. Anyway, that's the saga. So you had your problems. I had my problems.
Yes, but you handled them well. And you and Eric, the tech together, I think would make a good team. I got to tell you, is anyone else out there, folks? You get the same feelings I do. I kind of want to like go through, like take a travel through Stan's garage or laboratory, library, you know, his house, just to see. It's got to be like a museum quality stuff that he's got going on there. His science lab, museum kind of stuff, man.
Out in the workshop out there, I've got the lathe room, which houses a bunch of models about this size, via drive, water, marine drive models and air drives. And around behind that is all the tools and equipment that supports all that, battery chargers and connectors and the tool cabinets, you know, and gasoline, you know, diesel, books. And then we come back over here. I've got two oscilloscopes and frequency generators and wires. Oh, I forgot the wires hanging down in the workshop there from the ceiling to determine the twist moment when I applied DC current to the battery wire there to show people in the northern hemisphere that gravity interacts with the magnetic field. And
I would bet too you've got some anti-gravitic vehicle like stored in a shed, you know, outbuilding somewhere on your property.
I'd tell you, but I'd have to shoot you, you know.
I know. Wouldn't want that. So yes. So thank you for your understanding. Appreciate that, and sorry about your problems as well. So okay, we'll rock.
Okay, talking about anti-gravity and whatever, slide 55 in my show images page today, I have a quote, or a video actually from Stephen Colbert, I think it is, interviewing President Barack Obama. And it says, yes, Barack Obama knows the UFO's answer, but he can't tell you. And then you click on the video and you see Stephen interviewing the former president on various issues, and toward the end, he tosses out the UFO question. And he has a go at the president saying, well, by saying you can't comment, you've already answered my question. You do know stuff about it. They do exist. Now, I thought about this and about an incident that I've described in your show before, which happened back in Australia when Holly and I were still in Perth. It was around 1996. Last part of the year, I got a phone call in the office there from the other side of the country, from Canberra. And it was a woman I didn't know. And she said, I'm blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, good to meet you. How can I help you? And she says, well, you know, President Clinton and his Secretary of Defense, Jim Schlesinger, are here in town, or were here in town until today. They went on up to China. And I said, well, no, I hadn't paid attention to that. What's the deal? She says, well, I met the former, defense minister, Jim Schlesinger, outside here in Canberra at an art show. I said, okay. And she says, well, I was looking at a painting and stuff there in one of the buildings. And this tall fellow was kind of off my shoulder there. He commented on the painting. I turned around and talked to him. I says, oh, you're a Yank. And he says, yeah, I am. She says, what do you do? And he says, oh, I'm here with the President of the United States. I'm the Secretary of Defense. And she says, oh, yeah, right. And he pulls out his ID and says, yeah, it's me here. She says, wow. She says, boy, well, nice to meet you. And they parted ways. Maybe 20, 30 minutes later, she said, she was listening to an outdoor speaker guy on his soapbox here expounding on something or other. And the same guy was there because she recognized him from the height and the size. And so she went up to him. She says, ah, we meet again. He says, oh, yeah. She says, hey, I wonder if I could ask you a few questions about, you know, things. And he says, oh, what kind of things? And she says, well, classified things, stuff like that. Let me let me see your guards and stuff. I don't see any of those. I'm just really curious if you're who you say you are. And he says, well, look, I'll tell you, I'll answer your questions. He says, let's step on down this hillside here into the park there and sit in that park bench out there in the middle of nowhere, and we'll talk. So they walked up down there, she said, and they sat next to each other. And she says, okay, she says, now here you are. You're with the President of the United States, and there's nobody here, no Secret Service. And he says, he opens up his coat, and he says, you see this antenna here and this button? He says, I push that here, and from this hillside here, you'll see all kinds of people come down to get you. And she says, huh. All right, well, let me ask you, what do you know about UFOs? And he says, oh, fair amount. She says, well, what's the deal with them? Are they real? He says, you know, I really can't tell you that because it's classified. Oh. He says, but I can tell you this. If you will contact this man here over in Perth who wrote a book about it, we have a copy of his book in the White House and in the Defense Department, and you'll get your answer about what the UFOs are and what the plan is. So then that's why she rang me. So I did the test, sent her at that time a fax of a black and white photo of two or three secretaries of defense to see if she could identify him by the picture. And she did talk to Jim Schlesinger, which I found out later from his office as well anyway. But anyway, it was quite amusing to hear Stephen Colbert talking to Barack Obama, and Obama saying, well, he couldn't tell.
But to be clear, that man was you. That name was you.
Yeah, it was. It was. And as I've said before, I mean, I had copies of Cosmic Conspiracy book where I talked about this in President Reagan's personal library, in Prince Charles' library, in the Duke of Edinburgh's library, and they actually contacted me. And then in Jim Schlesinger, and in the cabinet for President Clinton. So it got around, and to this day, I don't know why they let me keep walking around talking about it, but there you go. The Lord look after me.
Wow. Folks, now just think about that. I mean, how great is that? Contact this guy. He'll tell you. And that's Stan Dale. You know what, Eric the Tech, that probably answers the question why, out of our vast library here in the studio, that Cosmic Conspiracy is missing. I'm kidding. It's here. But wow. Cosmic Conspiracy. Grab a copy of that book. It'll answer a lot of your questions as well. All right. Good.
You know, on that note, back in the 1978 to 82, 81, something like that, I got calls from the States, from Christian bookstores and from postal employees who said that at that time, the Cosmic Conspiracy was being collected by men dressed in black suits, probably agents of some sort of the government. They would come in and collect them from behind the counter and from, you know, anything being mailed that had that in it into the States. But that stopped, I guess, after a while. I was able to get the book into the United States and everybody's had a chance to see it. You know, this thing with Pelosi going over to China, I know you've been talking about that.
Yeah, help me out with this, man.
Well, when you say help you out, it caused a lot of saber rattling by China. And of course, Biden would have been useless if China had actually done anything, you know, shoot her plane down or try to stop him. But what was the real purpose of this visit? What's her position? Okay, Speaker of the House. All right, fine. Now, in Taiwan, we know that all of our chip manufacturing, like 80-90% of it, comes from Taiwan. Extremely important. Why do they send Pelosi? Well, first of all, they couldn't send the president or the vice president because they really don't have the acumen to do much more than, you know, button their shoes or something. They can't handle it. And she's a hard negotiator. We know that. Even though I don't like her politics, she's a tough old bird. So she gets over there and is transferring technology or information actually to the Taiwanese, where it can't be, you know, eavesdropped or intercepted by the Chinese through electronic means. So I can see why they would send her. It makes sense. China has to do something in that area, in the China Sea and toward Taiwan. When they were sending Pelosi over, they sent, I mean, she's arrived safely now and everything, but they had the Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier and the escort ships with them parked over there. And then I read in another article that the U.S. government is grounding, what is it, like 80% of the F-35 force, I think. I'm not sure. It's one of the planes. Do you remember reading that article?
Yeah, I do, and I think you're right on that F-35. It's the newer
Yeah. Something with the oxygen supply to the pilot or something or other. Yes. Yeah. And I thought, well, that's nice to tell everybody about that. But then I realized the Chinese probably know every darn thing about these things because they have people working in the factories, in the patent office, and, you know, they've got spies everywhere. So why did I worry about it?
It almost seems, just very quickly, it almost seems like Pelosi has been mandated to create a crisis here where one needn't exist, where there is one always below the surface, but we don't have to bring it to the surface. So this bothers me immensely because if you go back through history, I was talking about 95, 96 era, which is perhaps the most, relatively speaking, similar time in when you had a delegation go over to Taiwan. You had people coming here. China wasn't happy. I mean, they weren't happy, but they couldn't do much about it. Now they can. So I don't know. So what you're saying, what I'm hearing you say, Pelosi went over there, share technology, because otherwise, I mean, it's got to be face-to-face. Otherwise, they could intercept it. Yeah. But at what cost?
And she could be sharing intelligence and their plans, et cetera. I mean, we all know that Biden is not really doing what is being done by the U.S. government at the moment. He's just a puppet that makes press releases and stumbles through things. But the Pelosi's and members of the Senate stuff, they're the real movers and shakers and the people behind them. So whatever they wanted Taiwan to know, they had to do it face to face because we know how leaky technology makes everything.
Okay. And
so why was China so averse to her coming over? Was it, you know, because it showed U.S. support? Well, they already know that. We have a vested interest in Taiwan. So why?
Yes.
It had to be that there was information being passed they couldn't steal. And, you know, plans and tactics they couldn't steal on a face-to-face. And
that makes the most sense. Okay. To me, that makes the most sense as I struggled to make sense out of it. That, to me, makes most sense, and that's why you get paid the big bucks for
Sorry, did I miss my check?
You didn't get it?
No. The big bucks, I wish.
What are the three biggest lies? The checks in the mail? I'm not going to go there. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Earlier today when I was in one of the battery shops, I ran into an old timer and I had my the cap you wear, like a baseball cap, but from the U.S. Kitty Hawk. And I was the guest of President Clinton's cousin, who was the electronics officer there. And so Holly and I and one of my sons were given the cook's tour of the Kitty Hawk, and I had that hat on. Well, so this guy just assumed that I was Kitty Hawk, you know, ex-Kitty Hawk instead of Air Force, but he introduced himself. He's an older guy. And it turns out that he was in Homeland Security years ago, and he was in the bomb defusing department. And I looked down quickly to see if he had all of his legs. And he said, oh, yeah. He says, no, I lucked out. He said, I almost caught one with a suitcase bomb. But he said, after 15 years of that, I figured it's enough and quit. But you never know who you're going to meet there, you know, in the shops. And it was kind of cool.
How would you like to have that job, Stan?
No.
You called during supper. I'm sorry, honey, family. I've got to go out and defuse a bomb here.
Well, if I had to defuse a bomb, I think I'd rather it be a nuclear bomb, because if that goes off, it happens so quickly that, you know, in a flash, you're somewhere else, gone. Those that blow off limbs and put projectiles in you and you have to suffer a while, I would rather not defuse those because that's just painful.
Good
Think
point.
About it.
Yeah.
That's why people say they'd rather be at ground zero when they drop the bomb because they won't know it. Well,
it's only the first, 1/30th of a second that hurts, I guess, right? But anyway.
I don't even know if it's that long. I mean,
maybe not.
Look what they did in Hiroshima. They so dismembered or destroyed, discombobulated or whatever, a body that it left a shadow in the stone where he was standing in front of the stone wall because the body was gone. In that flash of a second, it was so hot that he was just gone. So, anyway. Wow. Okay. Enough on those good things. And now, speaking of the Chinese, in slide 57, in the past 9 years, the Chinese government has allegedly been trying to tamper with the Federal Reserve in an attempt to undermine American monetary policy. For example, one of these employees of the Federal Reserve was detained for 4 times during a 2019 trip to Shanghai, and Chinese officials threatened the individual's family unless the individual provided them with economic information and assistance. If we have those guys into our Federal Reserve and into our intellectual property, so like the patent office and things, we're in deep trouble. I know they're everywhere. And in fact, I was talking to that guy, the former Homeland Security guy, and I said, if President Trump, who did such a good job, were to come into office even right now, this moment, I don't know that he could undo all the things that the swamp have set in motion in this last year and a half. It's just so all encompassing that overarching that you can't really go in and clean the house quickly and without a lot of problems. They're just everywhere. They're like a disease. They've taken over this country. All the key infrastructure and education and legal systems, political systems. I don't really see a bright future for us other than a civil war, and that's not a bright future.
Not in the least, but I agree with you on that 100%.
On that good news, slide 52, Bashar Assad, a new aid deal is being formed between China and Syria that will include the delivery of communications equipment to where? Damascus. And it set off alarm bells within the Israeli security establishment, according to a report by news site Breaking Defense. They said, "We believe that many facilities of the Syrian army will be rebuilt by the Chinese, who have the capability of bringing in thousands of workers to complete the work in time, in short time." The source was quoted as saying that in the report. Now, that puts China into the Middle East, now threatening Israel indirectly through Syria, and Syria, of course, is, it's got Damascus and it's got close access to northern Israel. When you see that, it's got to ring alarm bells for sure, because, it's just a stone's throw over the Golan Heights up into Syria. And then just north of that, up the mountains there at the foot of it, is Damascus. And we know it's going to be destroyed from the biblical prophecies in one night. It will become a ruinous heap. Now, if China is building communications equipment there, and if Russia is making deals with Assad for nuclear assistance and things, or with Iran, which I'll talk about in a minute, then Damascus is a place where they would store a lot of their munitions so it's closer to hit Israel, so that Israel wouldn't have time to shoot down a nuclear device coming their way from Damascus. So it's a very good reason for Damascus to be attacked by the IDF, Israel Defense Forces. And
I always said that World War III is going to have its start in Syria. Okay. I believe that too. I did a number of articles back a long time ago. It all goes back to Arab Spring, Benghazi, Libya, the CIA hub in Benghazi. I was shipping arms and even personnel up into Syria, up through Lebanon, into Syria, Damascus included, and now this. So this, pay attention to this, and thanks for bringing that up. Very good.
Yeah, it's odd when you say that, because Syria does play a part in history, you know, way back where the fallen angels descended to Mount Hermon. They're just above Damascus there in that mountain range there. You know, it seems to have been a place of evil from the very start, doesn't it?
Good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't even think of it that way, though. Again, which is why, yeah, okay.
It's high ground there. I'm just thinking, you know, strategic things, why the mountain range, it looks down over Israel. When you're in the Golan Heights, you look down over northern Israel, you have the high ground. So, you know, conventional warfare-wise, on the ground, it's a great place to have your troops there in Syria and go down through the Golan Heights into Israel. Of course, Israel knows all this, and they've been making preparations to stop such nonsense. But the thing with the technology today, a missile can be launched from Syria somewhere, and it's so close to Israel that really the chances of it getting through are pretty strong. You know, the Israeli defenses just cannot react sometimes to a missile attack. By the time they detect it, it hits. It's just so close. So what do the Israelis do when they're told by the Iranians, who get into Syria as well, have their stores of weapons there, when they're told that Iran wants to destroy Israel and the United States, big and little Satan, they call us, then Israel has no choice but to take preemptive action in not letting them have nuclear weapons. So that's why they go in and they bomb their centrifuge plants that they can find, their underground facilities for the missile storage, which we've talked about before on the show. Israel is forced to do that to avoid being blasted, you know, entirely by nuclear weapons. Not to say that it won't eventually happen, but right now, you know, if you were Israeli IDF, you would have to do this. And people are condemning Israel for making these attacks and everything like that. Let's see. Let me just turn this phone off.
Okay. Another order for EMP Shield, EMPShield.com, promo code Agman.
No, that was the boss. I think she forgot that I was doing the show here. Iran is now getting help from Russia openly. In slide 54, you can see that, where it says, a recent meeting in Tehran, Iran, of course, bringing together Russian President Vladimir Putin and the Ayatollah, Recep Tayyip, Yippee-ki-yay. Erdogan. All right. Anyway, they bring these two together, and Israelis say the meeting was fraught with end of days implications that Ezekiel 38 started to trend on Twitter. I'm sorry, I'm having a little bit of trouble with these glasses here, seeing that. It has signed an agreement to supply aircraft parts and equipment to Russia and service Russian aircraft. Russia is also involved in the Biden administration's ongoing efforts to revive the Iran deal, as Russia will be building much of Iran's increased atomic infrastructure. Now, that means, really, that the Iranians could get nuclear weapons from Russia, and they could take them into Syria and launch them. And then it's their fault, not Russia. Russia's just trying to help them build their nuclear facilities for power and things like that, like a lot of the other nuclear nations do. So it's this mighty chess move about, I didn't do it. I just gave the Ayatollah, you know, help in making his power, you know, for his country. Even I didn't know that he was going to make a nuclear bomb and go after Israel. So these little things you see in the press, you put all the pieces together and you see that they're coming after us. And then if you look at slide 53, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, the IRGC, threaten to nuke New York City if America or Israel attacks Iranian nuclear facilities. If America or Israel attacks Iran's nuclear facilities, New York will become a hellish ruin, says a regime video posted to the Telegram. Now, there you see it. We have to take preemptive action. If we don't, they're going to build the missile and bomb Israel, and they'll probably come after us too. I think Iran will join with China and Russia when they do invade the United States, and that will happen. I'm almost positive of that. So they say, if you do this, we're going to bomb New York. You're the big Satan. You're going down. We have a government that I don't understand. I mean, even the globalists, I don't understand why they would let America be bombed unless they're through with it, unless they've raped us enough, you know, of our technology and finances and tech, you know, and whatever else they wanted, that they don't care about the United States. It can be destroyed. They're just, the swamp is, it doesn't make sense unless they're through with us. You know, that's, they've taken everything they can from us, and now they're going to let us be bombed. Strange to look at things that way.
Wow. Wow. When you think about it that way, and put this together with, even though it doesn't seem relative, but with Ukraine, I think China, okay, so going back a little bit, China learned some lessons from Ukraine, Russia's capabilities, U.S.'s posture, and then this is all a big chess game, I think. Wow.
Yeah.
And compared to it, that, okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to, as I say, think on this for a while, but yes.
Well, look, the Middle East is a really, really confusing area. I've said that for many years, that the Antichrist is going to bring a short-term peace between the nations of the Middle East, you know, the Arab nations, Islamic nations, and Israel. He's going to have to pull a rabbit out of the hat. I mean, there's so many ancient arguments over territorial borders between various sheikhs, you know, in the Arab countries that the British partitioning caused, that it's a nightmare to solve, to give everybody what they want and still have peace between them. And so I look at that. I look at, you know, Mohammed bin Salman. He's trying to do that. He's trying to pull everything together to give appeasement, even to the Iranians. For a long time, he's just kind of hated Iran because their type of Islam is opposite to his. Excuse me, it's more militant than his. So he's been against them. But then over the last year, he's been sending, you know, private emissaries over to the Iranians, to the Ayatollah, to say, look, we need to make peace for a period of time. So, you know, our common enemy is Israel. And yet on the surface, Mohammed bin Salman has been saying, oh, you know, we'll join the Abraham Accords. I think we're moving that way. We'll let the Israelis fly over our country, and actually we'll let them land here. And, you know, we're making overtures, and we're also going to help with the Palestinian issues to take the pressure off of Israel. And so all looks good on the surface, that MBS is, Mohammed bin Salman, is trying to bring peace to the Middle East and to bring, you know, bring his consortium of Arab nations together and sign a deal with Israel. But I don't trust him. I've never trusted him, and people shouldn't, because I think he's going to be one of the groups that tries to destroy Israel, to attack them. And I think he'll get a surprise. His army will, for sure. Anyway, it's so complex that all we can do, you and I and those who study this, is to look at the chessboard and try to put the pieces together and see where it's heading long term. And I think long term, it's just as I've said, that we're going to see this happen. A fulfilling prophecy.
Exactly. Prophecy fulfilled, being fulfilled, yeah, as we speak, too.
Yep. Yeah. You remember, oh gosh, when was it? Maybe 10 years ago, we were talking about this at the time, about the chemtrails and things, and how they were doing something, you know, nefarious all over the planet with these chemical trails that they put in the atmosphere. Sure. Slide 49, I looked at it and I just had to laugh out loud. The concept of addressing climate change through blotting out or dimming the sun was back in the news on Thursday as Reuters offered an exploration of a technique that would spray tons of chemicals into the air through stratospheric aerosol injection. Even if solar geoengineering were practically possible, who would be in charge? The thread asked, early efforts to create rules for this change show signs of stalling, as critics warn. This makes it more likely that one powerful state or individual could take the hate, potentially harming others. Now, it could take the lead, sorry, could take the lead potentially for, harming others. Now, I've talked about this before, we talked about it, is that the global engineering, if it's done by one nation, you know, that our one overarching government for the whole planet might be efficient, might work. But when you have China, Russia, Canada, other countries working on ways to control the weather for their own environment, you know, for their own crops and things, you have these systems all working against each other. They'll be out of sync if you don't have it coordinated. And there is no question that the aerosols that have been put up, and they have been put up, were even talked about by Dr. Edward Teller, you know, that's the guy's project that I work for, to reflect back a lot of the heat from the sun. It was helping to control overheating of the planet, which would cause catastrophic climate change, and it is doing it. It's still getting through now. But I had to laugh, as I say, you and I and Steve Quinn and a lot of others talked about this chemtrail stuff, and people, you know, that haven't studied kind of go, oh, that's impossible. Well, those of us that have studied have seen the documents where it was proposed, you know, by even Teller and Wernher von Braun. People have talked about geoengineering this way to try to protect the planet from the increased heat from the sun.
What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with all this?
Well, I mean, look, in 1977, there were newspaper articles about Russia and the United States making weather warfare agreements.
Yep.
And one of the things that was discussed in it was that the Russians could take Siberia and take coal dust and spread it over large areas of the snow in the Siberia, causing it to melt, collect the heat in the black graphene type of stuff, collect the heat, melt the snow, change the ambient weather patterns, wind patterns that go over to where? Alaska and the United States. And that would harm us, and they would melt their permafrost and things, but, it's a weather warfare thing. Maybe they could use it. And you and I talked about the danger of such stuff, about melting the permafrost and releasing a lot of the methane gas. And we've seen it since you and I started talking about it, where big holes going boom, this methane gas collected under the tundra that was defrosting and ignited and blew big holes up and down. And then you see this cavernous hole down in there. I've put up a number of the photos of them as the methane explodes. It comes out of a hydrate form. And we've also, you and I discussed about if you have these hydrates, which we do have in various locations in the ocean floor where they are frozen down there in the hydrate form, methane hydrate, when the ocean gets a little bit warmer, you're going to see large bubbles form and come up of methane hydrate, and then methane is released from the methane hydrate, comes up above the surface of the ocean, and you have a fireball. It's going to be interesting. It's definitely happening, and it's not due to cow gas or, you know, industrial stuff. As I've said many times, the reason that you're not seeing an official warning about all this being out of our control is that they don't want to panic the people, because you're telling them that there's something that the government can't handle, that mankind can't fix. And that would make people start to riot, and anarchy would spread across the planet. So they tell you a lie about, you know, Al Gore type stuff, that it's climate change caused by human activity. And if we do this and that, it'll slow it down and change the trend, and we'll be all right. And it's really a Band-Aid that they're giving us, because the real culprit is the sun and the change in the sun. As I've been telling you week after week, yep. Watch the sun. Yep. And it's certainly getting that way right now. Really hot.
That's very true. And, I got an email. It was last week asking why you put so much emphasis into the sun, about the sun. It was actually a two-part email. That was like the second part. And my response simply was because that the sun, and hopefully I answered it correctly, is the key climate change key behind the climate change that we're seeing as being blamed on other things other than the sun. Is that about
that's,
right?
That's the way I see it. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And I explained it, you know, as I said about the trying to keep the population of the planet from panicking, from anarchy setting up, by telling them, well, it's something that we can't control. We can't fix the sun. So it leaves no hope. And then anarchy sets in and people start stealing stuff and shooting each other. So unless you have some sort of a global control.
Kind of like Chicago or LA right now. But anyway, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago is certainly that way. I mean, people have been moving out of there like gangbusters. it's not good. And well, I'll get to the sun in a minute, but okay. Definitely that's the primary driver of the climate on our planet and the other planets in our solar system. We are subject to the moods and changes in the sun. The Bible, the book of Revelation, and some of the Old Testament prophets speak of problems with the sun throwing off a cloud around it and then getting very bright suddenly, seven times brighter than normal as it does some kind of a phase state change, and burning green grass and trees and boiling the water on the side of the earth that's facing it. So it's not just, you know, idle speculation. It's trusting the Bible and then trusting the science that we've got showing that the sun is moving into a very unstable situation at the moment. Even the Russians have published stuff on that. But anyway, heat waves, slide 50. Heat waves are set to melt the alpine glaciers at a faster rate since the records began being stored on the alpine. Andreas Linsbauer, a glaciologist at Zurich University, explained that the glaciers are in a state that they are usually in at the end of the summer or even later. It is sure that we will break the record for negative melts. So in other words, again, this climate change is suddenly coming upon us from the sun, the heat, and it's melting glaciers. And that, of course, the glaciers have to flow down into the oceans eventually, the water. And this will be a rising, you know, the sea level. It takes a lot more of the glaciers to melt at the poles for it to be serious. But still, this is part of the change that the sun is causing. In Greenland, slide 51. A striking satellite image shows a major Greenland meltdown between July 15th and July 17th. At that time, about 18 billion tons of water melted out of Greenland's ice sheet and flowed towards the ocean. Then the melting intensified even further. Between 8 and 10 billion tons of water per day melted and ran off from the ice sheet from July 20 to July 23rd. I don't know how much further we'll have to go until, you know, Greenland is just dry land and the poles start to contribute their water into the ocean. But at the rate things are going and the crops are being impacted by this solar misconduct, it won't be long. It just won't be long.
I like that. Solar misconduct.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody rang me yesterday afternoon. What'd she say? She says, what do you think about the sun? Are we going to have a colder winter, than normal down here in Texas or wherever it was? And I said, just a minute. I'm sorry, but I think I broke my crystal ball. I mean, how are we going to know? A rather interesting phenomenon that I'm still thinking about in slide 40. Scientists have warned that if the rotation rate of Earth continues to speed up, like it's going faster, we may need to remove a second from our atomic clock. So you think, well, big deal. Researchers at Meta said a leap second, which is, changing the clock by 1 second, would have colossal effects on technology and become a major source of pain for hardware infrastructures. Now, I don't know why it would, but, change the clocks by a second. Anyway, what causes the planet to speed up, even, for that extra second? When the planet's mass gets closer to the center of the planet, like when the surface collapses, it causes the spin of the planet to increase because you're concentrating that moment of inertia of spin down into a smaller ball, which means it spins faster to conserve momentum. So, even though it's just for like a second that you're worried about, why are we getting the effect of the surface of the Earth, you know, contracting a bit? What's causing that? Is that what's responsible for volcanoes and earthquakes becoming rather prominent? I don't understand exactly that mechanism, except that I know that that spin rate, you know, the spin of the planet increasing, will occur primarily when the mass of the planet contracts a bit. So what's causing it? I don't know. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Make your day.
That's kind of interesting for a lot of reasons. All right, I'll leave it there. Okay.
Wow. What do you say, mate? All right. Let's see. Okay, slide 41. I put that in every week to get people to want to look at this. It's the UV index, ultraviolet from the sun. Now, the dark purple things are like 11s and 12s, which are extremely high ultraviolet penetration of the atmosphere over the United States for sure, but at the equatorial regions around the planet always. You want to watch the ultraviolet C level, not the UA, not the A and B levels of ultraviolet, but the C level, which is really quite cantankerous and harmful. Our magnetic field that normally shields us from that is weakening. There are a lot of arguments in the scientific community about whether that's a clear and present danger, or the weakening of the magnetic field of the Earth, but I'm one that says yes, it is, because it shields us from certain solar flares and you know, ultraviolet and stuff like that from deep space. And if we lose that, the electromagnetic shield in the ionosphere and the magnetic field, we're going to see a lot more harm to our planet, plants, and to our people, livestock. I know that this year, like in our garden out there, vegetable garden, we're what, at about a mile height from sea level here in Pueblo, and our pepper plants used to be like, you know, tall like that, hang down, you know, peppers, and they wouldn't touch the ground. Now then, our pepper plants are doing good to get about, let me see, about that big. And the pepper plants, or the peppers on the plants, actually hang down and touch the ground and get, you know, rotty on the tips and ripen early. And we don't get a very, you know, thick-skinned or, you know, fleshy type pepper. And I look over at the tomato bush as well. We've had one or two tomatoes that were that big. Majority of them are like, you know, around that size. Mm-hmm. The plants aren't growing up to where we fold them over the bars that we put up to take the big plants. They're stunted. The peas just fell over and died. They didn't do much at all this year. So things are happening. The peach trees, the apple trees, small apples, small peaches. And it's definitely something to do with the sun. I don't know whether it's the ultraviolet radiation or what. About the only thing that I'm happy with is the onions. And boy, we're getting massive onions. And our asparagus is growing. So other than that, these solar changes are killing all of our normal product. Wow. Something is happening. And I don't know where to say it's drifting to, because I don't have enough data. But yeah. Okay. Look at slide 52. Okay. Slide 42 is the normal heliograph showing the parts of the sun that are facing us and that are approaching us and that are moving away, but we can't see all of the backside. You click on the picture on that, you see that there's a bright, yeah, that's the one. On the left side, they're approaching us within the next 7 days, is a very bright, very active region of the sun. Now, what is facing us now? We'll get away from this picture here for a second. Go over to slide 39 and click on the picture. As I've been saying for several weeks, several, in fact, probably months now, the magnetic fields of the sun are joining across the equator on one side of the sun, not on the other side so much. We're looking at where they're joining right now, coming out of a huge coronal hole in the southern hemisphere of the sun and crossing up over to the northern hemisphere. Those magnetic field lines are joining to other areas on the northern hemisphere. And what this does is it squeezes down that side of the sun toward the equator. You know, the magnets are trying to pull the plasma together. On the other side, the backside, they're stretching the sun apart over there, because, you know, it has to give when you're sucking it down on one side and not on the other. You're weakening, thinning off the plasma on that side of the sun. Now, I'm sure I can get a lot of argument from the physicists and the solar physicists about this, but that's the way that my common logic tells me. And what's coming around now in that picture you're looking at, if you look at the top left, there's a bright spot at about 10 o'clock with magnetic field lines coming out. Now, remember that and go over and click on the next slide, slide 38. Now, slide 38 shows that spot, and behind it, coming around facing us, is an active region that is throwing out some really hefty solar flares and prominences. This is not good, because it's going to be heading our way within a week to 10 days. That's just an animation of it there you're seeing, the actual photographs. But then if you look at slide 37, they show this super flare animation from the backside of the sun. There are a couple of them, actually. Whoa. And that one there, if you click on that slide, you see a big one coming off. Have you got it there yet, Eric?
It's coming. Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, wow. I mean, look at these things. They're huge. And see on yours, I'm trying to look at yours and mine at the same time. There. That was that one. Yeah. And now then there's another one that's a huge one coming out from the southern part of the picture. Where is it? About here somewhere, I think.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. This is not a quiet sun. And this is why Stanley spends so much time on the sun. The Bible spends so much time on the sun. So, you know, that's why I do as well.
Man.
Now, an interesting thing here. Slides 48 through, or sorry, 43 through 48 are all about similar things. Now, I don't know that I've told you, I might have on the air, I'm not sure, but my associate researcher over in California, the former jet pilot and engineer for jet engines, we've been working on a couple of things for a new kind of propulsion, which is the same one I've been working on, the Via Drive, for several decades, but with new technology being put into it. And I suddenly realized, I was studying this over the weekend, and I suddenly realized that submarines from the Virginia-class submarine, Seawolf, they have been using my propulsion technique, sort of, the reverse of it on the aft end of the submarine. So in other words, their designs for the submarines. How much time have I got left?
We've got about 2.5 minutes.
Oh, 2.5. Gee. Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, now slide 46 showed me something about the Seawolf. It was the first one to use a jet pump at the aft end. And it also had landing gear. This Seawolf submarine could land on the bottom of the ocean with with landing legs. Which nobody ever told me about, but there they are. Look at slide, which is the best one, slide 43, the diagram of the Virginia-class submarine. The current one they're working on developing is called the Columbia-class, and it's going to use the same kind of a jet pump. But you can see in that picture up at the top, you can zoom in just a bit, at the aft end there's this cowling over the prop. And you think, oh, well, maybe that's kind of focusing the thrust or something, or, and so you then go over and you look at slide 45, I think. And you find out that they're using not a propeller, but an impeller that sucks water into the cowling and then thrusts it out the back. Instead of pushing, it's sucking. And it's sucking the wake coming over the surface of the submarine, as you can see in that slide 43 diagram. The water flows around, aft and then down toward the propeller, or impeller in this case. And so the drag off of the surface of the submarine comes down and adds energy to the impeller, making it a very efficient way to propel your submarine at that speed. Now, what I've done, and what Brian and I have done, is we've moved that thing, reversed it up to the front. And so we thrust with an impeller. Believe it or not, we thrust ahead of the craft and then recirculate it in the shroud. So all this time, they've been using the concept of taking part of your drag wake and using the energy in that to reduce the energy needed to propel your submarine. Anyway, that was,
they know a good process when they see it. Sandale's process, as a matter of fact, as we've talked about it before.
Yeah, well, let's reverse it and put it up the other way. And then you've got a flying saucer that does wonderful things.
There you go. There you go. And see, folks, if you are a Stan Deophile like I am, you would join his Patreon and get a lot of information like this. Go to standale.com. Make sure you support him on Patreon. Stan, thank you so very much for being so flexible. I know it was a heck of a run today, but I appreciate it. I really do.
Thank you for letting me know.
God bless.
Bye-bye now.
EMPShield.com, promo code Hagman. Have a great night, everyone.